sometimes even terrifying. This week, as I was doing some study for the message today, I happened across a website that was just a news website and happened to be for the city of Chicago, Illinois, in the United States. And this headline caught my attention. The headline says, 911 dispatcher shoots woman after road rage. Two kids shot on the west side. And I began to read the article, and as it went on, the article, literally three pages with basically bullet points of people in Chicago who were killed on that day because of gunfire. They were shot and killed. But the one that, you know, I guess caught my attention most is 911 dispatcher, the emergency dispatcher, the person that you call whenever you're having trouble, shot and killed a young woman, a teenager, because she got mad at how she was driving. There's something wrong with our world. There's a sickness that is so rampant. You look at it, it's not just in the U.S. and in Hamburg during the G20 conference. There's riots and people are injured, and they're all around the world. No matter where we seem to look, there is this sickness, there is this problem which we have, and it almost cannot be defined, but the best way I think of describing it is a rage. There is almost a worldwide rage that can be touched off at the slightest provocation and sometimes ends tragically, as in this article. I was reading an article in the Guardian online, and the author says, talking about recent events and the rage that kind of is building up, it says it revealed an enormous pent-up anger, which had first become visible in the mass acclaim in Russia and Turkey for pitiless despots and the electoral triumph of bloody strongmen in India and the Philippines. Never have so many free individuals felt so helpless, so desperate to take back control from anyone they can blame for the feeling of having lost it. Now, political situations aside, I think that phrase, that people are desperate to take back control from anyone they can blame for their feeling of having lost it, is the characteristic that so characterizes our world today. And it is this rage which simmers beneath the surface in many societies and people around the world. Now, the truth is for someone who has that bubbling beneath the surface, it's very easy for us to think that our rage is justified, that it's triggered by someone else, and that we're not able to control our rage because of the situation that we're in, and someone else is to blame for that. But it destroys. And the destruction can be seen in homes, in families, in societies, in lives that are taken, that are destroyed because of this rage that is seething beneath the surface in so many places. If we're one of those rage-filled persons, we must begin to learn what it means to take ownership of that. And then how do we change? How do we change? How do we see a difference? How do we see transformation in our lives? We're talking about heroes of the New Testament. One of the greatest heroes of the New Testament has to be the Apostle Paul. But whenever you look at the life of the Apostle Paul didn't start off as Paul, literally didn't start off as Paul. He started off as Saul, and we know him as Saul. We get to know him as Saul. And when we get to know Saul, Saul is without a doubt the most rage-filled person in the New Testament. I would challenge you to find anyone in the New Testament who is more rage-filled than this Saul whenever we get to know him. This rage seethes and it expresses itself because he seeks out those who are followers of Jesus Christ and seeks to destroy them. And he does. I think that's something we should never forget, is that the Apostle Paul, as he was still Saul, destroyed lives. His rage led him to do things that he would regret for the rest of his life. Now, he was angry. He was angry because he saw something that was out of his control. He was angry because he felt like there was a threat against Judaism that he had to do something about. Those who had chosen the way, as Christianity was known in those early days, they were at fault, and they had to be stopped before they destroyed the very foundation of Judaism as it existed in that first century. I want you to listen to Paul's testimony. This, at the time he shares this, he is in Jerusalem again after having gone through missionary journeys, and he is in Jerusalem, back in Jerusalem, and he has been thrown out of the temple and beaten. It is the very same rage that he helped start. And now he is its victim. And he has been thrown out of the temple, and he has been beaten. And he is literally, his life is saved by the Roman soldiers who come to get him and arrest him. And it's only his arrest that saves him from being killed. And as he's being carried off to the barracks, he literally asks these Roman soldiers, "Would you give me a minute to talk to the people?" And we read in Acts 22, verses 3 through 21, the testimony that he gives to the people who have just been beating him. And starting in verse 3, it says, "I am a Jew, born in Tarsus in Cilicia, but brought up in this city, educated at the feet of Gamaliel, according to the strict manner of the law of our fathers, being zealous for God as all of you are this day. I persecuted this way to the death, binding and delivering to prison both men and women, as the high priest and the whole council of elders can bear me witness. From them I received letters to the brothers, and I journeyed beyond, toward Damascus to take those also who were there and bring them in bonds to Jerusalem to be punished. As I was on my way and drew near to Damascus, about noon a great light from heaven suddenly shone around me, and I fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to me, 'Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?' And I answered, 'Who are you, Lord?' And he said to me, 'I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom you are persecuting.' Now those who were with me saw the light, but did not understand the voice of the one who was speaking to me. And I said, 'What shall I do, Lord?' And the Lord said to me, 'Rise and go into Damascus, and there you will be told all that is appointed for you to do.' And since I could not see because of the brightness of that light, I was led by the hands by those who were with me and came into Damascus. And one Ananias, a devout man according to the law, well spoken of by all the Jews who lived there, came to me and standing by me said to me, 'Brother Saul, receive your sight.' And that at that very hour I received my sight and saw him. And he said, 'The God of our fathers appointed you to know his will, to see the righteous one, and to hear a voice from his mouth. For you will be a witness for him to everyone of what you have seen and heard. And now, why do you wait? Rise and be baptized and wash away your sins, calling on his name.' When I had returned to Jerusalem and was praying in the temple, I fell into a trance and saw him saying to me, 'Make haste and get out of Jerusalem quickly, because they will not accept your testimony about me.' And I said, 'Lord, they themselves know that in one synagogue after another, I imprisoned and beat those who believed in you. And when the blood of Stephen, your witness, was being shed, I myself was standing by and approving and watching over the garments of those who killed him. And he said to me, go, for I will send you far away to the Gentiles. So Saul, this man who is consumed by rage, he is consumed by anger, and he lives out this rage and he lives out this anger in trying to take captive those who are following the way, those who are believers in Jesus Christ. And on the way to Damascus, he meets this Jesus. He encounters him in a way that is beyond anything that he can imagine. And he is blinded. And it is only through the help of Ananias that he again receives his sight. And over time, it's not instantaneous. This transformation that takes place starts at that point, but it carries on for several years as Saul becomes Paul, the apostle that we know, the hero that we know. But he never got away entirely from what he had done when he was still in the midst of that rage. He had to learn, even in that time, at the transition, at the time that he is encountering Christ, he has to learn some things that I think in terms of us, how do we live? How are we transformed? How do we become more? It's so easy to be sucked into this rage and this fear and everything that is going on around us. And how do we stand contrary to that? How do we stand in a way that looks differently from that? How do we live in a way that stands firm even when there's the threat that we too will be consumed by those who rage around us? How do we let go of that rage? And then how do we stand firm to live differently, to be transformed? Paul had several things he had to learn and he had to go through in order to get from the one to the other. First thing is he had to reach the end before he could come to the beginning. You know, Saul, thought he was on top of everything. Did you hear how he listed his credentials whenever he's talking to those Jews who are attacking him, who have beaten him? He lists his credentials. He says, look, I was one of you. I was one who had everything going for me. I had the highest education. I had the best background. I had everything going for me. And yet I missed it. He had to come to the understanding that he wasn't on top as he thought he was. He had every advantage, and yet the very thought of those Christians drove him mad with rage. And in the midst of that rage, he did things that would forever haunt him, even though he knew he was forgiven, even though he knew he had laid those at the feet of Christ. He repeatedly says, I know. Paul calls himself the chief of sinners. And I think part of the reason is he says, because I am the one who persecuted those who follow Jesus. In searching for the truth, I persecuted, I injured, I caused the death of those who followed Christ. And he had to come to this understanding that all of the things that he thought he had going for him actually only caused him to hate the very things that God desired for him to love. You know, have you ever noticed? Sometimes religious people are the most angry. And you know what makes them the maddest? Grace. Grace makes religious people furious. Why? Because it seems so easy. Why should they get off so easy? I've been working so hard. I try to do everything that God commands me to do. And these people come along who've lived in a way that does not reflect who God is. And suddenly they get the grace of God. Why should it be so easy? Some of the most angry people on the planet are those who are religious. God isn't interested in us becoming religious. He is interested in restoring what was broken, what is dead, bringing it to life, creating, transforming, and creating a new creature in Him through His grace. He's not interested in making religious people. And so Saul encounters Christ on the way to Damascus, and he recognized what he was doing and how low he had to sink before he could look up. And secondly, Paul had to come to accept help from the very person he would want it the least before he could see again. He's blind. Paul is blind, and he goes into Damascus. He has to be led by the hand into Damascus. And when he gets to Damascus, the man who comes to him, Ananias, is a follower of Jesus. The very person, in fact, whenever God is talking with Ananias, Ananias says, God, you do realize, because God comes to him and says, I want you to go and I want you to meet this man named Saul. And I want you to pray for him, and his eyesight will be returned to him. And Ananias says, okay, let's just get this straight. You've done a good thing. You've blinded the man who has been persecuting your people. Now you want me to go and pray for him so he can get his sight back. And then take me? Ananias had to struggle with, do I love enough to go to the person who was persecuting me and those I love? Saul had to understand that the one who could help him was the very one he had been seeking to persecute. They both had to come to the point of trusting God to put them together in a way that would change history and would change each of their lives. He had to be led. Paul had to be led to Ananias, and Ananias had to be willing to be led by God in order for God to do the transforming work in the life of Saul. Who is it that we're avoiding? Who is it that we're not going to because we don't like them? Who is it that we look at and we think, that person is so blind to what God desires to do? And we simply say, but God, I can't go to that person because they hate you. God, I can't go to that person because they hate me. God, that's not the kind of person who you really want in your kingdom. And God says, why don't you leave that decision up to me? Our task is to go. God's task is to set the stage. And then finally, Paul was used by God because his rage was transformed into a fierce grace. Now, here's what I mean by that. Paul was filled with rage. And when God transformed him, when God touched his life and began to work in his life, and when he was willing to allow God to do that, this rage that seethed within him became a fierce grace. There was nothing that was going to stop Paul from sharing God's grace. He was willing to be beaten. He was willing to endure. In fact, I love whenever we read in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, Paul actually lists the things that he encounters, that he suffers whenever he is in following Christ. He lists those. He was whipped with 39 lashes. The belief was is that 40 would kill you. And he was whipped 39 times, 5 times. He was beaten with rods 3 different times. He was pummeled with stones. He was stoned, literally stoned and left for dead. He was shipwrecked 3 times. You know, if this was me, I'd begin to get the message or begin to think, you know, maybe I'm doing the wrong thing. I have the worst missionary luck of any missionary in history. But Paul loved with a fierce grace. He was willing to do whatever. It says he was adrift at sea. He was on journeys. He was in dangers from rivers, from robbers, from his own people, from the Gentiles. He was in danger, he says, in the city. He was in danger in the wilderness. He was in danger at sea. He was in danger from false brothers. He had toil and hardship, hunger, sleepless nights. He was often hungry and thirsty, cold and exposed, and the pressure of anxiety for all the churches. You have to love fiercely to be willing to do that. There has to be a commitment to grace that is every bit as strong as that. Have you felt that rage that we talk about? That anger that just seems to overcome you? Have you felt the grace that is so fierce that you are willing to do whatever it takes and go wherever God calls? Because the two correspond. There's the rage, the anger that seethes because we're not in control. But when we give the control to God with everything we have, then He transforms that into a fierce, unstoppable grace. Paul held just as tightly to the grace of God as he had held to his hatred. He exchanged the hatred for the incredible love of God. And every place he went, he told people about the incredible grace of God. Now, it wasn't easy. It was hard. And it didn't start all at once. He wasn't some sort of rock star. In fact, he had to go home because the disciples initially didn't trust him enough for him to stay in Jerusalem. The people, the Jewish people, were threatening to kill him, so he went home. And you remember last week whenever we were talking about Barnabas? Barnabas went and got him in Tarsus, where he was from, and took him with him to Antioch. It didn't happen overnight, but he fiercely loved. And because he fiercely loved and was willing to go through all of those things that were listed in 2 Corinthians 11, God used him in incredible ways. You know, the best missionaries, and all of us, by the way, if you read my article this week in the newsletter, you know all of us are called to be missionaries. Missionary, being a missionary isn't about primarily about going, it's about being. And all of us are called to be missionaries, and the best missionaries aren't necessarily those who plan to be missionaries. It's those who love fiercely, love regardless. So being a hero doesn't mean you come from a noble place. It means you take ownership of that which is dark within you. You give it to God and ask for His transformation. You cry out for the grace of God. Being a hero means extending the very same grace which has been given to you to the next person and the next and the next and the next. So my question this morning is, could you and I become as fierce about the grace of God as we are sometimes in our anger about the things that are out of our control? Could God transform us? Could God change us so that we love with a fierce grace that will cross every river, every boundary, and goes to every person? Would you pray with me, please? Father, as we come to this time in which we celebrate the Lord's Supper, Father, help us to understand that you sacrificed on the cross that we might live in fellowship with you, that we might experience the transformation that takes place when we give our lives to you and you change us. Father, some of us struggle with that. Some of us struggle with what it means to be your follower and to love with that kind of fierce grace. Lord, even as we celebrate your death and your life this morning, change us, transform us, help us to be those that you've called us to be. And we pray this in your name. Amen.